All right, we are plugged in on Wednesday, the 23rd of November, 2022, for the Crass Files podcast with Adam. And author and researcher Dawn Lester is, of course, plugging in with me tonight. Isn't that awesome? Catch up. We catch up usually once a month. Dawn is in the UK, and we like to chat about all her magnificent work over all the years, and break down the world around us as we see it right now, and go over all the latest, for our listeners out there. So really important times, critical times indeed, that's for sure. And so always great to have Dawn plugging in on the podcast with me. Real Independent Media, the Crass Files podcast here in Sydney, Australia. Everything's up on the website, crassfiles.com. So enjoy, folks, and contact me through the website, of course. If you have any questions or anything to ask Dawn or anything, and I'll put all of Dawn's links and all her information up with the podcast description, of course. And you'll see, we'll recommend the book tonight, of course, which is up on the Crass Files website. We love to recommend our books. It's really important that we get people's their hands on books, physical books to read. It's really important that we do that. Thanks to the Crass Files members as well. You guys are great. You help me to continue. I do this alone, so it's great to have a little support community in there and to help me to continue here. And you can support me over on crassfiles.com for a cup of coffee a month. And that really is ultimately about support. And there is a members area as well with extra podcasts and different things. So always plenty going up. I've been very busy, and when I'm not on with my guests, I'm doing the Night Watch podcast, and it just gives me a chance to sit down here quietly and go over all the latest news. I was just telling Dawn that whether it be mainstream, alternative media, I don't really care. I just go over everything, and I tried to have a look at it in my own way and just break it down, offer my two cents, if you will. Dawn, good to have you on with me tonight, of course. As I said, I'm here in Sydney, Australia, on the northern beaches on the coast, and you're over in the UK, and this gives us a great chance to sit down and cover all the latest news and bits and pieces and things that we're seeing. You've always got your fingers on the pulse of everything that's happening, I know, indeed. And you're doing some great research, and you're always doing lots of interviews, and that's why I love having you on, because you're not just willing to talk about your book and things, you're always willing to go wherever we go, and that's really wonderful. And we've really gone through some deep water here on our podcast, and I will say one of the common, well, probably the most common theme that we talk about on our podcast with Dawn is the German virus theory. And that's just something that I've become very interested in over years, and I'm researching myself. And I've run into great folks like Dawn and other guests, and this has fascinated me, and I want to know more as well. I want to know more. And so I've been looking into this, virology and all of this, and it dominates our discussions, and it dominates Dawn's work, because really this virus and germ theory, it really has laid the bricks of the foundations of fear and propaganda and torment, and really that whole control structure that dominates our lives. And if you look at the medical system itself and the pharmaceutical corporations and the whole structure of this, it's largely dominated by the German virus theory, scaring people into thinking that they're going to catch and spread something to someone else. And in that way, people are able, you know, the system itself is able to really control people's lives. So people aren't in control. And this is something I wanted to bring up with Dawn tonight on the podcast as well. We've been touching a little bit on this on the recent podcast, is that we're not really living our own lives when we're being so dominated, by governments and media, and we're living in a fear state. We're not fulfilling our true destinies. We're not finding our own goals, and and living in a natural way. We're living in a fear state, and we're living in a world that is bombarded with massive amounts of propaganda and fear mongering, and this drags us down. It really does. And this, you know, this gets pumped out 24/7 from the mainstream media, which is Dawn is extremely interested in. That's why we connect so well. And in the mainstream media and the TV and newspapers and all this stuff, what they do and how they do it. This is something that we need to face, and we need to talk about, and we need to break down a lot more in order to move through this and be better and get to clearer and calmer and better waters on the other side here. But as the system wants to dominate and control and maintain that, you know, that fear and everything, and keep us bogged down, well, it's gonna lash out as more of us wake up to this and we become more self-aware and consciously aware, and it's going to try and claw back control, you know, and things are going to get bitter and ugly and scary. I understand that, but we just have to, stay positive and dig our feet in the ground, stay grounded, and try to be positive and move forward here. But unfortunately, you know, in the alternative media networks and truth and networks, it's very hard to bring up the conversation of, there isn't any virus, you know. It's still a big sticking point, and it is. And I feel like, it's something that we have to keep going back, and we have to keep bringing it up. We really do, because it's such an important part of all of this. For me, as I said, it's that hammer that can break through that wall of propaganda and fear, and start to bring down that wall, because without that, I feel like we can't really get anywhere. So this has been the foundations of what we've been building here on this podcast for this year with Dawn, and into next year, into 2023. We've really been focusing on this subject, because it makes up so much of Dawn's research and life essence and what she's been doing, you know, and with the book as well, what really makes you ill, you know, and all of this. And we're living in a fear state, folks, and I'm still seeing it all around me, and this is what we need to work on and break down. So this is what makes up our podcast, doesn't it, Dawn? As we move forward into next year, time is flying.
It is
good to have you on anyway.
Thank you.
I'm just trying to, for new listeners who might come in and hear these podcasts around the world and come in and sort of say, what's this? I'm trying to bring them up to speed. I know our normal listeners follow this and think, ah, shut up, Adam, but it's just something that is a sticking point for me, because I feel like not enough people are truly understanding the German virus theory concept totally, because, you know, when you really understand this, you look at what's going on, and it really is different for us. First of all, Dawn, how are you going in your neck of the woods, and welcome on board tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be back. Fine. I mean, unfortunately, it's a wet and miserable way out there weather-wise, but that's just weather. You know, we're heading towards winter, so I suppose that's not too surprising. But of course, going into the winter season, you know, in this part of the world, that obviously they're ramping up the fear mongering of all these different so-called bugs and germs and diseases that people can get. I mean, they're really ramping it up with these whole ideas, the ideas of, you know, it's not just desperately air quoting here COVID. Then, you know, there's been fear mongering about what they started to call a twindemic, so that's COVID and flu. And more recently, they're now starting to ramp up fear about what they're calling a tripledemic. So they've added another so-called virus. It's RSV, which is respiratory syncytial virus. It's supposed to, well, again, it's, you know, as the name says, it's supposed to be another respiratory so-called virus. So that's the three of them. And also something that seems to be, reported as common during the winter is what's called norovirus, which is called the winter vomiting bug. So that's the fourth one. So they're really trying to create all kinds of fear about all these different so-called diseases coming at the same time. And that's why the core message, the core issue is that there's, you know, no evidence that there's any such thing as a pathogenic virus, is still really, really important for people to understand. Because it's not just, COVID's over, but we've got all these other things. No, none of them have anything to do with any so-called virus. And that's where, you know, they realise that maybe they might be losing some ground with the whole COVID narrative, which they obviously are. So that's why they're bringing in all the others and saying, oh, you know, all together. I mean, they're not saying that they happen necessarily at the same time, but it's all, like you say, it's just ramping up the fear mongering. But when people realize that there is no such thing as a pathogenic virus, there is no evidence and never has been that these particles that they call viruses actually cause any kind of disease, then there's just no fear about any of these so-called diseases. But it does mean that people need to understand what symptoms are. And so that's really the other side of this particular narrative, to say, well, okay, it's not a virus. And then, of course, you know, people say, yeah, but what is it? Of course, it's not an it. It's people have symptoms for various reasons. And you know that, I mean, we can dive further into that if you want, but it is that's why the core message that, you know, it's not about viruses, you know, needs to keep being put out there, because that underpins everything. When people realize that really changes everything. You know, that, I mean, it's a sort of cliche, but it really is a game changer, because then they will realize there's no need for any of the measures. Now, I mean, I know there's a lot going on about the vaccine, and I mean, if you want to talk about that documentary at some point, we can as well. So but as I say, that's why it's a key message, you know, about the virus, you know, that people need to understand, you know, that the germ theory is still, you know, still a theory, never proven.
That's right. Of course, we're getting that in Australia. The health authorities are warning Australians. There's the start of another COVID wave following the arrival of two new variants that can easily escape immunity from past infection and vaccination. KBB and BQ, barbecue. yeah, I always call them BS and BS plus, and, you know, bullshit.
Absolutely.
It's BS1 and BS2. I mean, it really is insane. But listening to what you were saying there, of course, another common thread that we talk about a lot is fear, psychological hold of fear, a stranglehold that it has over people's mindsets, subconscious mind. And how this plays a part in people's belief systems and what they see or don't see. How the medical system can make you feel a certain way and make you believe that you have something that you don't. And we've discussed this a little bit, which is something else we could continue talking about into the next year as well. This kind of spell that the medical system has over people, I think it's just been absolutely incredible watching this over the last couple of years, that completely healthy people, even today when we're out, there's still some of these testing clinics that completely healthy people with nothing wrong with them are lining up and in their cars and things, and they're going through to get a COVID test for something that doesn't exist. But I mean, they don't know that. But they're healthy. I mean, why would healthy people line up to be tested for something that they clearly don't have when the tests are so dangerous? Why would you wear a surgical mask when you're healthy. And when these things, we know it, don't do anything anyway, and how dangerous they are, and the unknown health side effects that these masks could be causing people, and these testing well into people's futures, not just the jabs themselves, but the whole psychological stranglehold we've discussed a lot with you, haven't we? The medical system and have through the media, if you were to look at that, over people's lives, in making them believe that they're going to get something that just simply isn't there. But people believe it so much that they're willing to wear masks and go down and line up and get testing and go down and get a prick in the arm with a substance they know nothing about, and none of us truly know anything about, like what this technology truly really is and what its effects are going to be on our future lives, on our children's lives. But they're willing to do that. And I was mentioning this the other night, you know, on the podcast, and I think to my last guest, that people are so careful about their money and what they consume, what they buy, what they get for their kids. They check the product labels. They check everything, Dawn. They're very, very certain about things. You know, they want to, if they go and buy a new car or something, they want to go and take it for a drive. They want to find out all the information. And searches. They check product reviews. You know, we're very funny about our money and what we buy and what goes into our bodies. I see them in the supermarket all the time. They're holding up the packets. They want to know what's in there. They try to buy the best things and everything. But when it comes to the big pharma, you know, of course, and what the doctor says, and the drug industry itself, the pharmaceutical industry, there are no questions. There's no need to question this godlike, entity that stands above all of us in his lab coat and his stethoscope. They are all and mighty, and we must do what they say. It really is unbelievable that people would be so careful in choosing things that they eat or consume and buy in their day-to-day lives, but they'll go down so simply and so easily without a question in the world and roll up their sleeves for this unknown, dangerous and experimental substance to be injected into their arms and not even question it and think that you're crazy for not doing it. This is the stranglehold that the medical system has over the minds of man. And it's so strong. It's really strong, isn't it, Dawn?
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say that's such an important point you make about how people will, check all sorts of other products out. They'll look at reviews. They'll find out all sorts of information. If it's, like you say, some kind of machine or car or whatever it is, that, they'll do all sorts of comparisons and they'll look at, they'll look into it in some detail. And that's just something that if they make a mistake, they can just, change it or something. Whereas something that actually gets put into their body, they won't even necessarily ask to look at the package insert or even think that they can ask to see the package insert, whether it's just a simple sort of, over-the-counter painkiller type thing. And usually you don't get to see the package insert until actually you've bought it, and then you look inside and then you see all the list of what are called, inverted commas, side effects, and all the possible contraindications. And so, there's so much that's unknown. But as you say, it's just people put their trust in the medical people because, they've studied, so they know what they're talking about and they're in charge of our health. But of course, once you start looking into it properly, you're quite right. It's not about health, sadly. I mean, it should be, but it's not. And it's certainly getting incrementally worse, or it has done over the last few decades. There was a time when, you could actually talk to your doctor, and now it's just, get these short appointments that you almost have, just a few minutes just to say whatever the symptoms are, and then, get your prescription and off you go. And that's not healthcare in any way, shape or form. But as you say, also the fear mongering is affecting people. Affecting people and their ability to live the lives that they should be living. And I mean, it is just so incredible that healthy people think they need to have a test to find out if they're ill. You know, that's absurd.
It's crazy,
you know,
isn't
that
it?
Really is absurd.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it, Dawn? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you're not in control of your own life. I mean, why would you go down? Why would I get up tomorrow morning if I'm feeling okay and just, I've got to go and see the doctor? I mean, do you really need to be checked for things that you don't have when you, I mean, this is really like paranoia. It's the media has induced you into this paranoid state that you have something that you don't, and you're going to go and line up and go through this ritual, because that's what it is. It's very ritualistic, especially wearing the masks. It's, you know, and for absolutely no reason. I mean, aren't people in control of their own lives? Talk us through this, Dawn, a little bit, like your research. What are your bullet points on why the pharmaceutical corporations, the Rockefeller medicine, has such a stranglehold over people, and how long this is going on? I know it's a big one. I don't expect you to go through everything, but what's your ideas behind the mask here of the psychological stranglehold the big pharmaceutical corporations have over the minds of the masses?
Oh, yeah, there's so much to unpack in that. One of the things that has been part of what's been going on the last, I mean, it's heading for 3 years now, isn't it? is the whole sort of, they'll just go, but it has become a habit. And so because it is now a habit, they'll just keep doing it. Obviously, they're not thinking too much about it, but it is the fear that they might get something, or they sort of employment or something like that, who knows. You know, there are those aspects. I mean, you know, we know that the behavioral psychologists are you know, pretty much part of all of this, because they know how to manipulate the way that the narrative is put out to create sufficient fear in people to get them to actually have these tests, wear the mask and all of that. But part of their tactic was, of course, you're not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for other people. And so it's very much altruistic. And so it appeals to people's better nature. So again, this is where the behavioral psychologists kind of know that's how to that's how to get people to follow their instructions, because you know, it's not, you know, you're not being selfish, you're being selfless because you're thinking about others. As far as the sort of the control of the medical system, and that what the Rockefellers did was you know, way back, that, I mean, before the 20th century, you know, sort of during the 19th century, there were a whole load of different types of healing modalities. You know, there were things like naturopaths and homeopaths and chiropractors, and I mean, there still are some, but they, you know, they used to be just as popular as, well, I mean, the allopathic system wasn't anywhere near as large back then. So, you know, there were lots of different practitioners, and they were able to help their patients heal by, you know, various different methods. And mainly, I think the sort of naturopathic type methods were pretty much to the fore. Of course, that doesn't suit a system that wants to sell products, because, you know, you can't patent nature. So they had to find ways of creating products, you know, synthetic chemicals that they could create products with and then sell them. And the way to do that was to take over the actual medical training system. And that's really what they did. You know, they, you know, through the Flexner report, and they managed to shut down all the other, or most of the other colleges, so that there were only the allopathic medical schools were allowed to teach. It's just controlling what became possible to train under. So they they only recognise the allopathically trained, if that's the right word, those who'd, you know, the medical students who'd followed that particular training course, they were the recognised ones. They were the ones who were licensed. Therefore, they were the ones that the public needed to trust. And that, of course, is at the core of why people are still going on with it now, is because right from the very beginning, we're told to trust the science. Only, unfortunately, when you actually look at it, the medical system is not based on true science. True science is inquiry into how the world works and how we actually function and, you know, what we are. And it's understanding, and it's always open-minded to, or scientists should always be open-minded to new information that may even challenge their existing ideas. And they should be able to sort of keep changing their theories according to new information. Only, of course, that's never happened with the allopathic system, because that was never based on science, and so they didn't want to remain open-minded to anything that was new. Anything that challenges their system, of course, weakens their business model, and of course they can't have that, because it is all based on the ability to sell products to treat so-called diseases that they believe are caused by germs. I mean, that's not all diseases are supposed to be caused by germs, but so many of them are. And of course, the fact that there is no such thing as a pathogenic virus completely undermines the vaccine industry, which is huge. And obviously, that's a key part of the whole medical system now. So that's why, you know, there's so much pulled into this one idea that, you know, that germs cause disease, therefore vaccines prevent disease, and there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that any vaccine prevents anything, because that's the whole idea of disease, as I was saying about symptoms. It's a misunderstanding of what symptoms are. I mean, it's quite simply, symptoms are the body's way of clearing toxins, clearing itself, healing itself, and, you know, as I say, it's self-healing. So if you're stopping symptoms, you're stopping the body doing what it does naturally, and therefore you are preventing healing. You are preventing your body recovering from any kind of health problem, or sort of, you know, clearing the toxins so that any damage can be healed, because the body can heal itself, does heal itself, but it needs to be given the right circumstances. And when you're continually adding toxins, you are not helping your body to do what it needs to do. You're actually making things worse. So even though symptoms may be stopped, that's not the same as healing. You know, when you take something and the symptoms stop, and people think, oh, well, that's it, I'm better. If you've taken a pharmaceutical, which is made from all kinds of synthetic chemicals, petrochemicals, the chances are that you've just added to your body's toxic load. But it has stopped the symptoms, because the body then recognises it's got more toxins to deal with, and so it then has to work even harder, which means that next time you may well have a more serious set of symptoms to deal with. So yes, I mean, there's an awful lot involved in all of that. I hope that kind of answers your question, if it covers all the points you wanted to make. But no, you know, enough. As I say, there's so much in all of that.
So much. There's tons to one. And you just reminded me of something there. I was going to ask you about, you know, obviously, with the pharmaceutical industry and their drugs and everything, there's a couple of things here I'll get you to cover, but it's a very slick industry, isn't it? The pharmaceutical reps, the drug names. We know that virology, you know, they use a lot of confusing terms. to bamboozle people. And but there's really nothing behind any of it, you know. And so the pharmaceutical industry, I have noticed through the years, obviously, with the kinds of drugs that they brand for people, with all different types of pills and potions and medications and stuff, they always have a lot of really fancy names and the packets. This is an aspect that we all too soon forget, don't we? Like the packaging and marketing behind the pharmaceutical products. And how they market that to the people, and when they pick up their packets and they buy, we know, like headache medications, paracetamol packets and stuff, there's just a million and one of them, but it's all basically the same thing. And they got into trouble, the Nurofen type companies, they got into trouble in Australia because they were had so many different packets for the same product. You know, it's like 1,000 different packets of cereal, and you read the ingredients and it's all the same thing. And it's just so many different names and so many different combinations and so many different promises of what these drugs are going to do. So, you know, that's another aspect sort of behind the pharmaceutical corporations, the drug rep side, and how they very slickly sell these kinds of things. That was one point I wanted to bring up to you, just to get some bullet points. And the other one was asking you about something that I've brought up a bit on the podcast, is sort of patent sort of stuff, how a lot of pharmaceutical-based products are actually grounded in natural medicine originally, you know, how the pharmaceutical companies will go into areas of the Amazon rainforest and places, and they'll go in because the natives have been using a tincture or a bark or a herb or something for, so many years. They could be using something to heal any number of conditions very successfully. And the companies will come in and they'll take those herbs and they'll take them back to the labs, and they'll synthesize and they'll break them down, and they'll try and take out basically the reason why that plant is helping you, your asthma or something like that, you know, just to bring up anything. And if they can't make it work, because plants usually work as a whole structure together, you know, and they'll debunk it and say it didn't work and it's dangerous and whatever. This is an interesting thing, isn't it? How like things, like basic aspirin and things, come from nature, and how they break down these plants and how they are able to turn it into a drug that basically smothers symptoms but never cures you. Whereas if you were originally going to take the herb itself, I know homeopathies because our family uses that and I've used it for a long time, you know, it'll get to the point where you don't need it anymore. And if you're not feeling the symptoms, you don't touch it. And if the symptoms come back, you have your couple of doses and it's like that. But eventually it's meant to get to the point where you don't need to take it anymore. But, you know, modern pharmaceutical drugs are really, it's like a cash cow, isn't it? It's designed in such a way to get people, as I said, smothering symptoms, so their symptoms come back and they need to go and buy their packet again. This is just, I know it's a little bit much and I don't expect you to go into all that. It's just something that's fascinated me a little bit about the drug industry as well, those couple of things. Sorry, Dawn. It's just a couple of things.
No, that's fine. You pick up on quite a lot of good points there. I mean, yes, it's a cash cow. The pharmaceutical industry.
How it uses nature, Dawn, is my question there. How it abuses absolutely. And uses nature to make products that eventually they've got nothing to do with nature, but they've stolen that recipe in a way, you know?
Yes. I mean, that, a lot of so-called medicines, pharmaceutical so-called medicines, start off from the basis of some kind of natural plant that, it, as you say, is claimed to have a particularly, beneficial aspect to it. But as you say, taking a whole plant is very different from what the pharmaceutical industry do, because what they do is they try and find what they call the active ingredient. So all they're doing is taking one particular aspect of the plant and then synthesizing that and creating some kind of drug on the belief that that is the what they call the active ingredient. Now, plants don't work that way. You know, nature doesn't work that way. It's all holistic. So a plant will have, it might have a particular active or something that might be recognized as an active ingredient, but that ingredient won't work without the presence of all the other ingredients of the plant, because they all work in harmony, in combination. And again, this is why it's a problem if people just think that they can take one vitamin or mineral without contemplating all the other aspects of you know, vitamins and minerals, whatever they are, that the body needs in order to absorb those vitamins and minerals, you know. So it's not just, it's always looking at this one individual aspect, this one part that is believed to be what is the cure, without looking at the whole, you know, the whole system. And you can quite easily put the system out of balance instead of putting it back into balance, into homeostasis. So again, you know, plants are part of nature, and so the body will recognize a plant, because it'll recognize that it's you know, it's natural, whereas the body doesn't recognize these synthetic chemicals. They may be I think they're often claimed to be chemically identical or near identical, you know, so they think because they've created something that's got exactly the same chemical structure, they think, oh well, it's exactly the same. Well, no, it's not, because the body recognizes it's synthetic, and it's not surrounded by all the other necessary, I mean, you know, like either sort of enzymes or amino acids or all these other aspects of what will be found in a whole plant that will be all in the right combination, that the body will recognize and be able to assimilate, you know, because in nature they're bioavailable, whereas the synthetic chemicals don't seem to be bioavailable. Now, the other point is that the medical system doesn't claim to cure anything. You know, that word's almost become you know, well, I suppose almost a swear word to them. You know, you're not allowed to use it. Whenever you look at, you know, these various different diseases on whatever websites, and, you know, CDC, NHS, or, you know, the WHO, you know, they say the treatments, they always talk about treatments. And quite often, as you were alluding to, they are regarded as being essential for life, or certainly for long periods of time. I mean, quite often, you know, with more chronic conditions, they are considered to be, you know, well, you'll need to take this for the rest of your life to manage your condition. And that makes people feel that, you know, they've got a condition that they then identify with. They then believe that it's part of them. And that, again, is part of the psychology of the whole system, to make people consider that they have a condition that there is nothing they can do about it, and they have to just, you know, take these treatments, and they their whole power is taken away from them, you know. And what is important is, you know, as I was saying, it is the body that heals itself, and so therefore we do have the ability to take responsibility for our health. And part of that means that we have to accept that we may need to, you know, well, not may need to, I mean, people really need to change their perspective about what they think diseases are. You know, they're not things that they get. And as you say, with these labels, because there are so many different labels, people identify with them, and then that becomes part of who they are for, you know, various different reasons. I mean, you know, it's all, I could go into the psychology of why people attach to these labels, and why, you know, there could be all sorts of reasons. You know, sometimes it's just because they get attention or they get thought about, or they I don't know, there's all sorts of different ways of looking at it. I'm not going to go into it all now, but it's coming out of that mindset and realizing that we can take responsibility for our own health, and we should be, except that it does mean that we have to then make changes to not just our ideas and beliefs, but also to our actions. You know, people need to recognize that they have to start looking at everything that they're exposing themselves to, and their belief system about what they think the medical system is. So, you know, it's quite a big one, and I can understand why it's hard for people. But again, you know, the whole idea that the medical system knows what it's doing, I mean, you know, there's so many different examples of the drugs that have been put out on the market as, you know, the wonder cure or whatever, and then, you know, slowly been withdrawn or been withdrawn from the market when it's been found that, you know, they were nowhere near a wonder drug, and they were quite harmful. I mean, just have to mention thalidomide. You know, look what happened there. You know, that they really had not undertaken a full research, any sort of full research to find out the potential effects on the fetus when they were giving this drug to women for morning sickness. And in fact, when you look at morning sickness, Dr. Henry Beeler has written in his book Food is Your Best Medicine, saying that in fact morning sickness is the body's way of clearing out toxins, and therefore making the body, you know, a more healthy environment for the growing baby. So it's not something that should be stopped. Anyway, sorry, I've gone round all sorts of circles. I don't know, but yeah, I don't know if that's quite well. I suppose it started the conversation, but there's so much in all of that. You know, there's loads.
It's a deep one. You bring up a real rabbit hole there, because I did an earlier podcast. I don't know when it was. It was definitely a few years ago with John Rappaport.
Okay.
And John was talking about the modern pharmaceutical drug industry, this pharma drug industrial complex, media military, you know, kind of drug complex. And he was talking about how this all ties into modern, you know, to psychiatry and psychiatric drugs. If you look at the United States, you know, on so many psychiatric drugs and opioids and things like that. So it was a few podcasts that we were talking about all of this, and it was really interesting, some of the steps that he was going through, how, you know, just for example, you know, school children might not be doing well at school, they might be not fitting in very well, they might be feeling a little bit sad or down, you know, and how this can tend to lead into parents being worried and taking them to see a psychiatrist, you know, and how the psychiatrist will build there. And he explained it really incredibly well, you know, and how they start to get them on these drugs. And a lot of these drugs I've never heard of in my life, you know. I've heard of Ritalin and all these sorts of things. And it was so interesting, you know, to cut a long story short, people would have to go back and listen to the show, but it was so interesting how it seems that the children and the parents are being tricked into thinking that there's something wrong mentally, with these children, because they just have some emotional hang-ups. And teenagers go through this, you know, when teenagers, with the hormones and the changing and school and everything, there's all sorts of things going on, and how this is being manipulated by this industry. And also what was very interesting to me is, and because I've not had personal experience with this, but I've had friends and people that I know who have been on medication from the psychiatrist, and it seems that the medication is mimicking the very illness that the psychiatrists are telling them or their, you know, the kids' parents that they could get, you know.
Yes.
So the parents are worried about the children because they're withdrawn, or they're not talking, and they're hiding in their room, and they could be being bullied at school. There could be a million and one things that are going on here with teenagers. We don't know. And so, you know, they go in to the psychiatrist to sit in the chair, you know, and eventually this rolls into taking drugs and then stronger drugs. So John was going through all these different levels of drugs they get them on. It was just astonishing to me. I can't believe this is child abuse, you know, and how that these drugs are mimicking these conditions. And as I've said, I've had conversations with people who have had these drugs, and they said they felt terrible on them, and they were hearing voices and all sorts of terrible things to do to people and things like that, you know. This is a real insidious thing, isn't it, Dawn? That we're not getting. Yeah. If we were to look at, like, say, young people, for example, who are just confused and could have any number of reasons why they're confused, that they're being put on drugs that are giving them these symptoms. And then, as John said, they're going back to the psychiatrist later and they're saying, oh, well my son's hearing voices, he's trying to cut himself or do these things. And then they're putting them on these stronger and stronger drugs. This was a really fascinating interview for me, and I know you would know a lot about this. I found it astonishing that this is what this industry has been doing, sort of hypnotizing people into thinking that they have these illnesses and mental sort of illnesses and things wrong with them when they actually don't, and then giving them these, as you said, these drugs based in toxic backgrounds to them, and then they're getting all these terrible symptoms on top of this, which you could really apply going back right through. I mean, you know, right through history, really, these drugs causing so many incremental problems that then months or years later people are going back and getting stronger doses, or they're being put on different drugs. This is a real web of deceit, isn't it, Dawn?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I mean, we do include reference to that kind of the mental health aspect of the pharmaceutical industry, because, as you say, it's pretty horrendous. I don't want to call it profession, the psychiatrists are, you know, trained in the same basic sort of, you know, false medical model that physicians are trained in, only their psychiatrists take the same medical system, medical training as medical doctors. They then take further training to then become a psychiatrist, so they're all sort of medical doctors in the first place, so they are trained in that that allopathic system to start with. There's so many parts to that. The one of the horrors that I found, we have actually included in a book, I haven't got the figures in front of me, so I can't relay them, but I mean, they horrified me when I read them, the number of young, and I mean really young children, I mean under five, that are put on these psychiatric drugs. I mean, even babies, you know, sort of 2, 3, just absolutely horrendous. As I say, I haven't got the figures in front of me, so I can't quote them, but I mean thousands, if I remember rightly, are given psychiatric drugs. I mean, how they can assess, a 2, 3-year-old to be having sort of mental health problems is beyond me. I mean, the basis for this this idea is that there is a so-called chemical imbalance in the brain. Unfortunately, that is never. People generally don't know, but that is never tested for. People don't have a test to find out if they actually have a chemical imbalance in their brain. And according to Dr. Peter Breggin, that test is not possible to be conducted until after somebody has died. So, you know, that cannot be tested. But what he said is quite sure is that once people start on these drugs, they definitely have a chemical imbalance in their brain, which is, as you say, why there's all kinds of horror stories of how people feel once they start on these drugs. I mean, sometimes, as you say, with teenagers, I mean, you know, it's a very very important part of their lives, where there's all sorts of upheavals and emotions, and you know, it's growing up and learning to take responsibility. You know, it's a you know, time of change in the teenage years, but also some young children who simply fidget in the classroom can be given that diagnosis simply because, you know, they won't sit still, and that could be quite simply because they're actually bored, because then they're not being stimulated sufficiently. You know, they're not being interested, or they aren't interested in what they're being indoctrinated with, because quite simply, you know, the kind of so-called education system is no longer about education. It's just indoctrinating, and you know, it's just, these are just memory tests for them, and that's not very stimulating. And so bright children are quite unsurprisingly going to be bored, or just, you know, just the fact of keeping children sort of sitting still when it's natural that, you know, especially on when the weather's lovely outside, that, you know, they want to be outside playing and connecting with nature and doing those sorts of things. So sitting in a classroom, being told something that's not exactly stimulating is not going to be encouraging them to sort of sit still. And then they're being told that, you know, there's something wrong with them, whereas in fact I'd say they're probably the, you know, the normal ones, if you like. You know, they're being normal. But I mean, although there's no such thing as normal, because we are all different, and you know, the whole system is designed not to encourage children to be creative, and maybe those who fidget are the ones who are more likely to be creative, or in all sorts of different ways, and that's not being encouraged. That's, in fact, if anything, that's being suppressed. Because we know all these different, the more creative topics are being removed from the curriculum. So children are not getting that stimulation from those kinds of subjects, you know, whether it's sort of art or music, or, you know, poetry, or, you know, all those creative topics that, you know, that are, allow them to come up with their own ideas, be creative, be, and again, it goes back to what you were saying before about, you know, lead, you know, being able to think that they can lead their own lives. You know, they're being put into these very, very narrow bands of what they are being told they can think, and the ways to think. And obviously those who are the more natural ones are the ones that are going to be fidgeting. And then they're told, you know, they have something wrong with them, which is just horrific.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you bring up there, Dawn. Obviously, that could apply to millions and millions of kids, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, looking at the schooling system, yeah, and kids not feeling like they fit in, and just being, as you said, bored and not challenged and not interested, and being, yeah, what are they going to do when they're bored? You know, what do kids do? Anyone listening who has kids, what do kids do, young kids do when they're bored? You know, they start fidgeting. And this, of course, is honed in by the drug companies, isn't it? That they have the ADHD and all these symptoms and things. You need to come in and get them on the drugs, which is mimicking the very symptoms, as I said, that the psychiatrists are telling the parents that they could have. You know, it's astonishing to me. You know, the parents could be taking their kids in for absolutely no reason, and these so-called doctors of psychiatry are making up all these conditions, symptoms, and trying to add it on You know, and oh yeah, the parents, oh, that kind of makes sense. You know, they're tricking him into believing something that isn't there. It's like a magic trick, poof. And then, you know, giving them drugs that actually really is giving them those very dark symptoms that they mentioned. That is a really dark system. Right there. In particular, looking at, I mean, if that is done with intent, I mean, people would say, you know, oh, okay, you know, doctors and psychiatrists and stuff, they wouldn't know the mechanics behind the drugs that they're giving and what symptoms they may, you know, the patients or whatever might develop from taking those drugs. But, you know, I mean, really? I mean, do they know what they're actually really doing? Or, as you said, Dawn, are they so indoctrinated in their Rockefeller School of Medicine thought training, you know, that they think that they're actually doing a good thing? I mean, it really is crazy to me, looking at that whole system. You know, do doctors think that they're doing a good thing when they can see that patients are reacting and going downhill after being diagnosed and given certain types of drugs and ending up worse than when they came in? Because, you know, if they are aware of what is going on here, then that implies to me very heavily that is done with intent, which is diabolical. You know, this is a problem. Or are doctors just going off their training, as you said, and that's just what they believe in? Because I have had conversations with doctors. It seems like they believe in what they're doing so much, they're just absolutely unwilling to change. And they think that, you know, it's almost to the point, even with dentists and things like that, it's like you as a patient, they don't like when you go in, if you're getting a procedure done to you, they don't seem to like when you quit, when you've done your research and you question what, you know, about that procedure and the outcomes and everything. They get a bit funny and a bit snarky with it, you know. They don't like being questioned because their system is God and that's the only way. And you go in, you open your mouth or you lie down, spread eagle, they inject you or they knock you out and they do the operation, whatever the million and one things they are, they do to you. And you don't question that system. It seems to me when you question doctors, they get kind of arrogant. And that rings alarm bells to me.
Some do. Yes, I mean, some do.
Not all. I'm not saying all doctors.
No, I know. But, it's really difficult. Yeah. And I'm not suggesting it, you know, it's intentional for everybody. I just don't know. But I think you're quite right. So many are just so fully invested in their training and absolutely believe what they're doing. They just think, you know, if they gave a particular drug to somebody for a condition that they've diagnosed them with, or, you know, been tested for, or whatever it is that's been something that's confirmed a particular condition, they'll say, oh, well, maybe this particular drug doesn't suit you, let's try another one, just because they're not even questioning the original diagnosis. They just think, well, maybe that person's not reacting very well to this particular drug, let's try another one, because there is a whole raft of different drugs that, you know, that they can then look into their whole system for, and they can get, you know, various different, you know, well, if it's not this one, let's try another one, rather than even questioning the basic diagnosis and think, well, actually, if that didn't work, is the diagnosis correct? I mean, because obviously that would then be questioning themselves. I do feel that, you know, there are more doctors questioning what's going on because of the extent that this is, you know, this has gone to, you know, the ridiculous nature of everything that's been going on for the past 3 years. It is, I believe, getting more doctors to actually have a look at things. I know it's giving a lot of them some very difficult decisions, because if they don't agree with what's going on, then they are not allowed to practice, because that's the whole point. They have to follow the rules, or else they are then, you know, they have their license removed and that's their livelihood. And for the most part, I believe doctors do go into that area of their lives because they are, well, I mean, they go into it for the right reason. You know, they want to help people. And so it's very difficult to know what to do, how to help people if they then have to abandon that particular system. But I mean, there are lots and lots of other modalities that they can move into, but they do have to shift their mindset about the mainstream system. You know, so I'd like to believe there are more like that. I mean, we don't necessarily hear about them because they're probably, well, they're not going to be publicised and reported because obviously they're challenging the mainstream. So we're only going to hear about the ones who are defending the mainstream narrative, because that's obviously, after all, what they want us to believe, that, you know, the mainstream narrative is correct and anyone who questions it is some kind of conspiracy theorist or other, some other sort of ridiculous label. So, you know, it's difficult. I don't know about people's intentions. I mean, it's a shame that those who are realizing there's a problem aren't, or more of them aren't, sort of speaking out. But I think it's getting to the point where something does have to happen. I mean, I don't know if this is the time to kind of look at that documentary that sort of died suddenly, because I mean, there's definitely something going on with these jabs, you know, the people who've had them, and there's definitely a problem.
And talk about that a bit, Dawn. The Died Suddenly documentary that's come out before we finish tonight, because I haven't had a chance to totally look through that, but I sent it to you. It's very popular in social media. It's all up on Telegram. And there are supposedly these big groups on social media that have been blocked, apparently on Twitter. They're blocking the Died Suddenly kind of stuff that's happening. Mm-hmm. This is a common theme we are seeing now and hearing about, that people are just suddenly dying. And we've seen it in the sporting world, in the big games, players falling down, clutching their chest and all of this after the COVID jab push and everything. And now there's a film out that you got to see, Dawn. It's only just come out pretty, you know, the other day that I could share it. But let us know your thoughts on this film.
Well, the main point for me was that really the embalmers and funeral directors are noticing a big change in, first of all, the numbers of people who are dying, and also the problems they're having with embalming, you know, the embalmers are having with embalming people. I mean, we know we can't rely on official statistics, you know, because we know they're manipulated. So if people who are actually in that arena, as it were, you know, so funeral directors and obviously embalmers, if they're saying that they are experiencing huge increases in the number of people who've died, and also young people and those kinds of things. And I think they're talking about babies as well.
Child coffins.
Yeah. And
happening in Australia too, and Tasmania, from what I hear.
Also, people who, yes, I mean, sort of, you know, pregnancies that don't go to full term. So, you know, sort of fetuses, babies dying, you know, so there's obviously a big increase in all of that, of that is related to these vaccines that, or the jabs. I mean, obviously, you can't call them. So, I mean, they're definitely dangerous. The point, obviously, for me and people like me who are on, if you like, kind of team no virus, the fact is that they didn't address that key issue that, you know, I mean, yes, it's obvious that the, you know, the jabs are dangerous. There was sort of imagery in there that was, you know, pretty horrible. So, again, the sort of ramping up the, you know, fear mongering from a, you know, a different point of, so they're adding to the fear mongering, but obviously, you know, the fear mongering that the vaccination, the jabs are dangerous, which they are. I don't think it helps. Although there seems to be plenty of information in that to show that there is a problem. So yes, there's, as I say, sort of it's useful, but again, there were some sensationalist aspects to it and showing some pretty horrible scenes, and also some scenes of people who are just literally images and sort of short video clips of people who are just collapsing, and whether they die on it, who knows, but I mean, just collapsing and dropping. So I mean, it's not just the people in, you know, sort of sports that we see are obvious, it's happening everywhere. I mean,
it's long threads of clotting they're pulling out of people's artery networks.
Yes, and you know, I could have done without those particular scenes, but yes, I mean, there is something, and that's what the embalmers are saying, that they're having problems putting the embalming fluids into people's bodies because there's some kind of clog, you know, these clotting, that whatever it is that is clotting is, you know, and that would have been the reason that people died suddenly, because, you know, their bodies were no longer able to push the blood around, obviously that created a sudden problem that, you know, the body just can't function. So yes, it is pretty horrible, but at the same time, it's the people who are still pushing the, you know, the jab is bad, which is true, but, you know, to take their protocols, which, you know, whether how helpful they are, who knows, but they're still not addressing the key issue, which is, you know, the there is no pathogenic virus, because obviously, you know, people can then sort of say, well, yes, this is just COVID, but I'll still go and take my flu shot.
So you're sort of discussing the fact there that they're showing the damage of these jabs and the nightmare behind what's happening to people. We're seeing that a lot in Australia. There's some terrible situations with people who can't get compensation or any help from the government, and they're suffering terribly. There was a case of a woman who was 52 who had a direct reaction after the AstraZeneca jab, and she was just clotting all over, and her feet are just pooling with blood, you know, like, and she's got sacks of fluid all over her body, and all the doctors, all the specialists, everybody has signed off that it was immediately after the AstraZeneca jab, the first one she had. She just had a terrible reaction, and they've all signed, but she couldn't get any compensation for it, an Australian woman, and the family's been taken over the hot coals, and their lives have been ruined. They're almost on the street because the woman's bedridden and the husband can't work. He has to look after her, and it's some terrible situation for them, and the government are saying that's not satisfactory. So the government basically in Australia said, we're setting up a compensation system for you if you do have an adverse event to one of the jabs, and we will pay you out. But they're not. They've only paid out a tiny percentage of so many cases, and it's getting worse and worse. And there's millions of dollars. Yeah, it is. It's going up and up. We're really seeing a delayed reaction here of people being injured. And of course, what you're talking about there is that. But you're just bringing up that side note in all of these documentaries that are very critically important, and people do need to see that they're leaving out that big elephant in the room, that there is no virus. I understand what you're saying there. Yeah, I get that. You don't hear it anywhere. And everything that we do see, no matter how extreme and violent that it is, at the end of the day, it is, all of it is still leaving out the most critical elephant in the room. And people say the elephant in the room is the vaccine damage. And I agree with that. But, you know, I would say the elephant in the room is that there is no virus, really. I mean, all this is happening because this is all based on a lie. Yeah. People people took this direction and this terrible outcome has happened based on a lie, the whole thing, the lockdowns, yeah. the everything that we've been covering for the last 2 years, the whole thing, and all these documentaries, the damage, the whole thing, everything is all because this is based on an absolute outright lie that there was this COVID-19 virus when there never was.
Yeah.
And this is something that never gets addressed in any of these films. And this is one that you just bring up. So I can understand that the point that you're bringing up there, yes.
Okay. Yes, I mean, that really was, as I say, the main point.
You're going over that in your head, Dawn, when you're watching the movie. You're like, are they going to mention this? But they never do they? And you're thinking,
no.
Yeah, it's like we all got damaged and we've all entered this situation because there was this virus, but there wasn't, you know. Mm. This is a real funny thing. It's such a, in a way for us, it's a liberating and it's a great thing to cover because we're learning so much. But at the other point, it really is frustrating. It's such a frustrating thing because it's all based on nothing, and that's what really gets me. Still, the fear-mongering continues, and I just it's very frustrating to me, you know.
Yes.
What's happening is, as we say, it's like a slow building avalanche, you know. It's an incremental thing in a way, and it's just with the jabs, people got injected with God knows what, and the consequences are only just starting to be felt. This ricochet is only in its early stages, and it's going to ping out and become more, stronger. And, you know, as people start to have these effects from these injections, because we just don't know, the human body is such an amazing thing, we just don't know how people are going to ultimately react at the end of the day to these jabs, whether it's a year or 3 years or 5 years later. One of the CEOs of AstraZeneca, that our government under Scott Morrison, our former Prime Minister, he did a deal with AstraZeneca, and they openly admitted on national television that they're making themselves exempt from any of these outcomes with people's health. And he said to the media, I played it a million times, that if in 5 years people get sick and start dying, we can't be held responsible for that. So, you know, basically, if you take these jabs in and you distribute them in your population, then at the end of the day, that's up to you, you know.
Wow.
That's what you're... And we know that the pharmaceutical corporations are exempt. So the governments have set up these fake compensation schemes. But really, if you do get injured eventually or straight away or whenever it is, 2 days later, a month later, a year later, I don't know when it's going to be and how it's going to be. And if it's going to be anything to do with the jab that you had, people could be sick for a million and one different reasons. This is what we've been talking to you about. The longer that this goes on, we don't know. So how can you prove it? It's like drinking fluoridated water your entire life and getting bladder cancer, because of the chlorine. I mean, who knows? You can't prove it. You have a direct reaction straight after you get that injection, you flop around like a fish on the floor, then it's pretty obvious it was the jab. But, you know, as the years go by and people could be sick for a dietary reason, they're living, where they're living, it could be a million and one different reasons. They could have had flu shots for the winter season. They could be just having health problems. Who knows? But how can you go in and say it was that vaccine for the COVID virus that I got. That's another problem that we've discussed a lot as well, but this is why I'm saying it. It's just such a nightmare for people. And so people who believe that they're, like, so basically someone may have had, say, for example, Dawn, someone's, I don't know, they're 35 years old and they've always been in tip-top shape. And they went down and they got a Pfizer jab. And ever since that jab, they just haven't felt very well. And they've tried everything to recover their health and they haven't been able to. And then they've ended up in hospital with pneumonia or infections or whatever it may be. And they've just gone downhill. And now they've been diagnosed with some terrible condition. And then they've gone through this situation where they're trying to get compensation and the government's saying, sorry, that's not enough. We can't pay you any money. That's something that's happening with people as well, you know?
Yeah.
But the longer this goes on and people keep getting jabbed, it just turns in, I hope people understand what I'm saying here, it just turns into a bit of a mess.
Yes, I mean, doctors, as far as I'm aware in their medical training, really have very little of their course, very little of their course actually covers vaccines. So they know very little about vaccines, apart from the standard practice of, you know, will you give vaccines to prevent diseases and, you know, how to give them all the kind of basic history or whatever it is. You know, it's only, you know, a few hours or something. So they really have no idea of the ingredients. They are, I don't know if they're deliberately trained not to associate vaccines with any subsequent kind of injury, but I mean, for the most part, they don't. If people say, you know, was it the vaccine, they're generally told by their physician, no, it can't be, no, nothing to do with the vaccine. Partly because I would imagine the doctor doesn't want to feel that a procedure that they've actually done for thousands of their patients has got anything to do with the reason that their patients are then having health problems. But I mean, it's not something that they deliberately do, but I mean, they don't make an association between some kind of health problem or injury and any prior vaccines. But as you say, you know, it may just be one. But if people have had a number of them, they won't be able to say, well, it was that one rather than this one. And certainly if they've had a few within a short period of time, I mean, it's almost impossible to actually identify which one it was, because they're not necessarily going to be able to identify what aspect of whichever vaccine, because as you say, it'll be, you know, lots of things together and it could be the combination of the vaccines. But they certainly don't like admitting, and they won't admit except in very, very rare circumstances. And even if people make a claim, very few of those claims are ever given in favour of the claimant. And at the same time, it's always with, well, you know, we're not accepting blame, but we're just, you know, We sort of compensate people, but it's a no blame situation. It's kind of, they're not agreeing to accept any responsibility for that, as you say, and they're trying, they're making sure that, well, the vaccine industry is making sure that there's absolutely no comeback on them, except people do have to remember that these jabs are still experimental. You know, they have not been studied for their long-term effects, and so, as you say, you know, people are being the guinea pigs, if you like, to for them to discover what the long-term effects are. And again, who knows what differences there are in the different products. You know, there are different manufacturers. Do they all have the same ingredients? I don't think so. I don't actually know. And I don't know if we'll ever know the exact ingredients, because, again, we can't necessarily trust. If the some of the reports are correct, then the package inserts on these jabs are blank. And even it says, intentionally blank. So there isn't even the information on the package insert. So there are lots of unknowns. And of course, that's how they're able to distance themselves. It is all, as you say, about money. And it's potentially worrying with the long-term effects. But at the same time, it's not, I don't want to be increasing fear-mongering because, we do know that the body is pretty amazing. It is able to look after itself. If you know how to do that and you take all the necessary actions to be able to improve the situation and increase your body's ability to detoxify, which is, mentally as well as physically, it is psychology. It is about how we feel. It is sort of mental process. So again, it is not to be fearful, and to take the appropriate action to then improve your body's health.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And well said. Well said there, Dawn. I think we've covered a lot of interesting points indeed
Well, I hope
on the
so.
podcast. I think absolutely. You covered a lot of ground, a lot of deep water indeed tonight that we've gone through. You want to just mention your book and website and everything and
Yeah.
your channels and everything before we plug out tonight?
Yeah, sure. The website is whatreallymakesyouill.com. The book is What Really Makes You Ill. The subtitle is Why Everything You Thought You Knew About Disease Is Wrong. There's quite a lot of information on the website, our blog articles, video interviews. There's a newsletter people can subscribe to. I mean, it's not a regular newsletter, but we occasionally sort of put out information. There's the audio versions of the book that's available there. We are on Telegram. We've got a channel, John Lester and David Parker channel, and there's also a chat group also on Telegram that people can join in. And yes, I mean that people can send us emails through the website, but we are not allowed to to give anything that could be construed as medical advice because we haven't got the appropriate labels. Apparently. So, please don't write and ask us for any information about any particular medical situation. There's plenty of information about how we can understand what these conditions are and what we can do about it.
Yeah, you don't have the medical industrial complex satanic imprint on your arm,
No.
Dawn. You've got to have the
No.
snake. You got to have the
No.
snake tattooed on your arms, like you're part of the club, you know. It's amazing, isn't it? How they
Yes.
say that.
Yes. Well, as to paraphrase George Carlin, no, we ain't in that club.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's funny how they work things, isn't it? So sly and manipulative. They can do whatever they want, but you can't say anything, you know. It's funny how they censor and block people from having their own open minds and having our own conversations and the censorship and everything. So really the only outcome is through their channels, you know. It's how it always has been, but we think outside the box, don't we? And we come to our own conclusions and we make our own way and we move forward in a positive way. What would you say, finishing up tonight for the podcast, Dawn, how to, what would you say to our listeners out there to stay positive and keep in charge of their own lives and in control? What would be your best bullet points there to give people a positive end here on moving forward into next year?
Well, the first thing is not to fear anything that's supposed to be caused by a virus. So that's a huge step out of fear, and to start recognizing that you can question things and you can ask questions. And if something doesn't feel right, then go with your intuition rather than anything that anybody else tells you. Start to trust yourself, take responsibility for yourself. I mean, it's not just an overnight thing. It suddenly it changes, but to start taking the steps, and you'll start to notice that things are better. And yes, it's connect with similarly like-minded people, and that's where we're moving. And the way we're going to get ourselves out the other side of this is to keep in connection with other people who think similarly, so that when you have maybe a day where you just start questioning yourself and how you feel, you've got other people you can reach out to, and they can give you the moral support. And that's how this all works. And there are more and more people who are, dare I use the phrase, waking up. So, there are more of us that are interconnecting. And so, it's a bigger and bigger network, and it's a wonderful thing. We will get through this. We are getting through it, and not to be scared of how things appear.
That's right. And the positive side of what you're saying there as well is that when you break out, when you release those shackles of fear, and you truly understand that you can't catch anything off anyone and spread anything. And when you really understand that no one else is going to make you sick, you know what? You're going to be sick a whole lot less.
Yes.
You're going to feel better because it's psychological. That's the thing. And when you do feel unwell, that's just your body's natural way of cleansing. Every yes. now and then, I get it. Everyone gets it. You'll just feel a bit unwell and your body's going to say, I'm going to take this break now. And it's going to push out some nasty stuff and you're going to feel a bit bad for a few days. But that's just part of life, and that's the way it works. That's natural law. That's how things go. And that's the way your body operates. And then you'll feel better for it. But when you take all this fear off the table and, you're going to catch something and spread something and all this stuff, and you realize that you're just stuck in this vicious circle, this game, it really will help you so much. And it really will. And you'll find that you're not really that sick anymore, that maybe it was all just in your mind, Yep. And and that is a really, really powerful tool that we want to build on here and push out to all our listeners.
Yes.
It really is. And you know what? It happened to me. It happened to me. I used to think that too. I used to work in big places and think that, Tony's coming in the morning and he's sneezing all over me and I'm going to get sick. I've been through all this, and I absolutely can tell you 100% to all our listeners out there that when I started looking into this and taking this whole you can catch and spread things off the table, I really have been absolutely fine. It's absolutely remarkable, to be honest. I realized that a lot of it's really just in your mind. Looking at the power that the media have, and what we were saying on other podcasts about how that I was talking on other podcasts, Dawn, that I've never seen TVs, TV sets in people's houses used in such a way with this COVID thing. Like it really is proof that they're almost like militarized weapons, that you have in your house, that they can lull you into this sleep, and they can show you all these soap operas and movies and things, and it can be like your best friend. But when the governments and the system, when they want to make you think a certain way, and they can turn those TVs against you in a heartbeat. And they and that is a they can use it as a weapon against the minds of people, and it's like a hot arrow through your head. It really is. And I've never seen the TVs used against the populations of the planet in such a way as they did with COVID-19. They really turned the media, turned those TVs and those newspapers against people. And it became our own worst enemy. It's like sleeping with the enemy in our own beds, in our own houses. And it's like having our enemies right beside us, you know, and they turned it against us. And it was just manipulating us 24/7 and making us believe in this boogeyman that just absolutely simply is not there. And we started to create this belief in our minds. And we started. And when you're in a fear state and you're thinking that you're going to get sick, well, guess what, folks, you're going to get sick. Because yes. you're telling your body to be sick. And this is not natural in any way, shape, or form, you know. And we just want to alert people to that and the power of propaganda. And this is something that we can start to talk about and dig up a little bit on our next shows, Dawn, the power of propaganda. And it's a common theme on our shows. We really want to dig this up and get people into looking into this, because it's been around a very, very long time. I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, how powerful propaganda can be, this spell that it can put people under. And when you're in a fear state, you really, really will think that you're ill. You know, I guess that for some people, you know, COVID-19 can be a very real thing. And I know I've spoken to people about this, and they really, really, really deeply believe it. They really believe it. And they think that I am out of my mind. They think that I am selfish. They think that I am cruel. They think that I am absolutely crazy, because what about all these people that are dying and everything? And they're just not thinking clearly. They're letting the media and these TVs and everything that I've been talking about here do the thinking for them. And when that happens, you've lost control of your life. And we want people to get back in the driver's seat of their lives and start controlling their lives and their destinies. And it's your life. It's your life, and it's beautiful. And it's a shame that people are not living their natural their natural lives, but they're not being themselves. They're zombies. They're zombies, and they're on autopilot, and they're being conditioned to think this way and that way. And that's no way to live, folks. That's no way to live. And that's why this aspect of everything that we talk about is something that I want to continue. And I don't think it's negative. I think it's really an important thing to break down and bring up and have a discussion about. Because if we don't look in that mirror and we don't recognize that, that control. And I think this is largely ego-driven. I think this is where they're getting us, Dawn. I think it's through our egos. And if we don't take control back of our true selves, I think that we're just kind of lose control of our cars, you know, run right off the freeway. So I think it's definitely going to be a common theme, although we'll probably hopefully do another podcast in December before we plug out for the year with you. If you are around, I know Christmas gets busy, but into next year, and with David himself, he was steering this in this direction as well, which really fascinated me in the show that I did with David Parker. He was wanting to go on this sort of road as well, to break down all this fear as well. It really is, because I think it starts within us, doesn't it, Dawn? We have to work inside ourselves and work within to see the clear picture of what's really going on here, and see that and have that courage to stand up and say, you know what, I've been manipulated, I've been controlled, and I want to break free of these shackles. And that's not a bad thing. That's your ego saying, oh, you know, like that's egotistical to think that's a bad thing. It's not. It's a freeing thing, and it will free you up so much. And your health And your mindset will improve greatly. I think you will agree with that, Dawn.
Yes. I mean, the power of the mind is a really important aspect. I mean, I know we've been talking about the kind of, the virus thing, but again, the fear, and that's to understand, again, the power of the mind. But as you say, that's a whole other conversation. And, I'd be happy to talk about that in more detail when we next talk. And yeah, I mean, it'd be great if we can manage another one before the end of the year. That'd be good. Next month.
It's moving quick, isn't it?
It is. Can't believe it's nearly December. Absolutely. I mean, just, literally a week away from the end of November. It's just, yeah. But
Everybody.
We're doing all right. We're moving forward. It's good. It's all good.
That's right. People's lives were held hostage using fear over the last couple of years, and we were all locked down, and everything that took place, and now it's just speeding up, and it's just amazing all the things that are happening. But for me personally, I just don't think we can get anywhere unless we start to break down these fear. It really is like the layers of an onion, isn't it? And the virus theory is part of that fear, because if you believe that you're going to get sick and you're going to catch something off someone else and spread it to someone else and all of this, that is playing into the game of fear, folks. It really is. That is fear-based mind control. Think about it. You know, Mother Nature has something out there designed for you that's going to make you sick and die. I mean, why would that be the natural design of Mother Nature? That's ridiculous. That is not how natural law works. Natural law should be working for all of us, and it should work in a way where we're all thriving and living wonderful lives and being happy. That is fear-based mind control, that you're going to catch something and spread it and make other people sick, and you're going to get sick, and you're wearing a mask and you're getting these jabs. That is fear-based mind control. It's very ritualistic. And when you're playing into this, you are submitting. You are submitting to this demonic system, in my eyes, and we can't have this anymore. It's time to wake up and move on. And I think that's what we'll start looking at, Dawn, in our next shows. I think it's really important. I have to keep going back to layers of an onion. I think that we all have these layers of fear in us, and I think that all of us individually have to work on expelling this and learning the truth of our world and what's really going on here. And we're just a couple of researchers, folks. I'm just a simple podcaster in Sydney. I mean, I'm still learning so much. I would never sit up here and tell everybody that I know everything. There is no chance in the world. Any scientist who gets up there and tells you the science is settled, he's a bullshit artist. The science is never settled. Not on anything. It's the world is so wondrous and so magnificent, and we're here to learn. And I've had a ball doing our podcast, Dawn, so I look forward to doing more.
That'll be great. Yes, look forward to it.
Absolutely. And as always, I'll put all your links up and info in the podcast description for our listeners out there. And I would say to the listeners out there, if you hear the podcast, if you want to contact Dawn about the books or anything, or David, please do that through the website, which will be in the description. They have a huge website, and you can become a supporter there and a member to help Dawn and David grow their website. And there's their great book, and which is up on the Crass Files website as well, in the recommended book slider. And there's a blog, and there's just so much, a wealth of knowledge in that website that you've built in there over the years, Dawn, as I've done on my website. So much information going in there over the years, so people will have lots and lots of information to look over and to research. But if you want to contact Dawn herself, I can put in the Facebook if you're on there. But probably the best thing is get over on Telegram, because Dawn and David have a channel over there. But you'll find all of that through their website, and a direct way to contact you guys, Dawn, if I am right, correct me if I'm wrong, is through the website for our listeners out there. If they want to ask you anything or ask you about the books or anything, it's better to do it through the website, isn't it?
Probably yes. There's a contact us where, we'll receive an email. So yeah, that's possible. So yeah, as I say, there are a few different ways. I tend not to be on Facebook too much these days for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's the way it is. All good, Dawn. We'll plug out tonight. Great chatting with you. We did about an hour and a half or so, and really good conversation indeed. And say hi to all the listeners out there, and hope you're enjoying the podcast. We're speeding up. We're almost hitting Christmas here, so buckle up, folks. Buckle up for 2023 and stay positive. And we'll be back on the next one, Dawn.
Okay.